Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So, before we start the class, I wanted to make a correction from last week's class. When I spoke on Lord Nityananda, I misquoted a quote. When the question was asked, should we become perfect before we preach? At the end of the class there, that was the question. And I quoted, at least when I quoted it, I said, Prabhupada's first meeting, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said such and such. So actually it was between two meetings. First meeting, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, you're intelligent young boys, why don't you preach throughout the world? But the quote that I quoted, the preaching will be good for you and it'll be good for everyone, actually came in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's last letter to Srila Prabhupada, which the same message was there. I think you should preach in English throughout the world. This will be good for you and it'll be good for everyone who hears you. So just wanted to make that correction. Today, I've been given a two huge topics, and there'll be little time to cover them, unfortunately. The descent of Mother Ganga and the early Ram Leela. So both of these are extremely vast subjects. We could speak on days. But I'll summarize them as best I can. It may turn out to be just some storytelling today, and I'll be asking, you can prepare in your minds. I'll speak a little bit about Ram's appearance, but as far as pastimes of Ram, I'll let you all fill it in from your memories and your favorites. So, and start thinking of that. A brief summary, as brief as we can go, is from Mother Ganga, her descent. There's two sections of Srimad Bhagavatam where it's described, and there are many other Vedic literatures where the descent of the Ganga is described in even greater detail. But in the fifth canto, the descent is there, and also here in the ninth canto. The origin of the Ganges, the first appearance is you may have covered when you covered the stories of Bali Maharaj. Does anybody remember the eighth canto classes? Yeah, when Vamana Dev expanded into his universal gigantic body, his first step covered all the planetary systems, and his second step pierced the shell of the universe, and the karana, or causal ocean, leaked through, you could say. There's a leak there. leak in the ceiling. And that is the Ganges. And from that point, she flowed freely through the heavenly planets only. She did not appear in the earthly planets. So her appearance in the earthly planets is covered in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5 and 6. So basically, there was a great king named Sagara, and he was very famous for his kingliness, taking care of the citizens, performing sacrifices. So this is the duty of the king. As we try to summarize Ram Leela as well, we'll hear his appearance was mainly to show the ideal behavior of a king. So many kings were like that, trying to perform their duties ideally. And so part of that is sacrifice. And so what is the sacrifice for? It's to engage the whole community or whole kingdom in a particular activity centered on God. So it's bringing everybody together. And then not only making people come together and work, but then there's a distribution of of wealth in many forms, of the distribution of knowledge, because all of the sages and brahmanas are there chanting the glories of the Lord. And then there is distribution of wealth as well. There's charity and giving. So this is the means or the purpose of these sacrifices. And this particular sacrifice is called a horse sacrifice. And so it's called a horse sacrifice for different reasons. That the kings, it's kind of like a challenge almost. Because when you're, at least in these days of the Vedic times, the kingdoms, you know, they're all throughout the Bharat Varsha or throughout the world, there are different kingdoms. And some kingdoms were friendly, amicable, some were subordinate, some were allies, and some were not. And so this horse would be sent out from this king wanting to do this sacrifice. And on the chest of the horse would be this emblem or this declaration that I am performing this sacrifice. It's like an invitation almost. Like, here's our invitation card. It's this horse. So and the horse would have this invitation. You come, you pay homage to this king, and please come to the festival, come to the sacrifice. So King Sagra, he sent out this horse. And so as we may have remembered also in different parts of the Bhagavatam summaries, that there was one person who didn't like anybody else doing horse sacrifices. Indra, yes. Why was that? He did 100. He was famous for that. And he was very proud of this fact. And he just couldn't bear seeing somebody even attempting to try to do a horse sacrifice. It was just too painful for him. So he would steal the horse. So again, part of the ceremony of the horse sacrifice is the horse would go out and it would be followed by the army. And so the kingdoms in which the horse would enter, those who would be subordinate or allied, they would give wealth and give tax to the sacrifice and say, yes, we accept your invitation. But then if there was a kingdom in which they didn't, they would take the horse and hold it. And then there would be a battle, you know, to declare subordination. So not only was a horse sacrifice engaging, but it was also to declare that this king was actually the most powerful king and should be paid homage because he wants to engage everybody in the service of the Vishnu. Because all the sacrifices, as we hear in Bhagavad Gita, sacrifice is to be performed for the pleasure of Vishnu. So that's the declaration. If you don't want to be part of this, if you don't want to be engaged in the service of Vishnu, then it is the duty of the king to make you do that. So this was, again, bygone ages. So this was so the horse was stolen, and the army came back. We don't know where the horse is. It's gone. And so for a long time, they were searching for the horses. And this King Sagra, is Sagar here? Is that where his name comes from? Do we know what his name was? His name from King Sagara? Oh, good. So Sagara, he had a group of sons. He had two wives, and he had two groups of sons. And this one group of sons, they were very passionate, very boisterous, very proud of their, you know, pride comes in numbers. So there was a great many of them, and so they went out. We're gonna go find a horse. And so in their prosecution of this duty, they tore up the earth. They basically, you know, when you're looking for something in your room, sometimes you tear the whole place up, right? You're looking for something and it becomes a big mess. So they didn't take so much care when they were looking for this horse, and they were very private. We're looking for this horse. Stand aside. And so they were tearing up the place, the earth. And but then they came upon a meadow, and there sat Lord Kapila, the incarnation of the Lord, who we heard about in the third canto, the pastimes of Devahuti and Kardama and their son Kapila Muni and his appearance. So he was there in meditation, and Indra thought it would be pretty cool to place the horse there and see what would happen. So Indra placed the horse there, and the horse was very happy to be in the presence of the Lord. And the Lord was in his meditation, eyes closed, And so all these sons, they, look, there is the thief. Let's kill him. You know? So they came rushing at him, and Kapila opened his eyes, and then all these sons were reduced to ashes, burnt to ashes, just by his power, just by the glance of the Lord, they were reduced to ashes. And so Sagara, you know, is waiting at home. Where are the sons? Where's any news of this horse? And so he had, from his second wife, he had a son named Asumudra, who, through some miscommunication and some misunderstanding, the king didn't have a very good relationship with, and that son left. But his son, Amsuman, was very dedicated to the king. And so he went again to look for the horse. And so he came upon the same meadow, and he saw Kapila, but he was devoted. He was in a completely different mood when he saw Kapila. He bowed down. He offered these wonderful prayers. And then Kapila said, yes, you may be wondering what this heaps of ashes are, but these are your uncles, I'm sorry to say. this was an unfortunate incident, but this has happened. And so Amsuman wanted, well, how can they be delivered from this sin of offending you? How can they be delivered? And so Kapila said, well, the only deliverance is if they were to be washed by the waters of the Ganga. Amsuman said, well, the Ganga is not here in this earthly realm. She's only in the heavenly planets. And Kapila said, well, you better start praying, you know, pray for Ganga to come. So Amsuman did many great austerities, and he was unsuccessful in his attempts. And then he passed this desire, this duty down to his son, who also was unsuccessful in his attempts. And so then again passed down to another generation. His son, his grandson's name was Bhagirath, and he took up this praying to Ganga to please come. And so Ganga appeared to him, and he said, yes, I will come under two conditions. And I'll read those here. When I fall from the sky to the service of the planet Earth, the water will certainly be very forceful. Who will sustain that force? If I'm not sustained, I shall pierce the surface of the earth and go down to the lower planetarises. So she was very accustomed to be happy in the heavenly kingdom, and of course in the spiritual world, very happy. She's very happy in her duties there, in her service of purifying the different areas and where she was manifest. But she was worried, if I come down to your realm, it's going to be such a force of dropping that I could pierce and go down to the real lower planetary systems, where so much more sin is going on, and I don't want to be responsible for their relieving their sins. And then, along the same lines, I do not wish to go down to the Earth planet, for there are people in general who bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sinful reactions accumulate in me, how shall I become free from them? You must consider this very carefully. So she was worried that she would become contaminated. Although she is purifying, she was worried that she would become contaminated. So Bhagirath said, oh, for that second concern of yours, I'll just read the verse instead of paraphrase. Those who are saintly because of devotional service and are therefore in the renounce order, free from material desires, and who are pure devotees, will always... who are pure devotees, expert in following the regulative principles mentioned in the Vedas, who are always glorious and pure in the behavior, and are able to deliver all fallen souls. When these persons bathe in your water, the sinful reactions accumulated from other people will certainly be counteracted, for such devotees always keep in the core of their hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can vanquish all sinful reactions. So this we heard in the first canto, when Vidura returned to preach to his brother Dhritarashtra, that Dhritarashtra said, oh, saints like you, saintly persons, pure devotees like you, are places of pilgrimage. And it was described in the purport that the people go to the Ganges, they go there to relieve themselves of sinful reactions, you know, just by bathing. But it doesn't really last. They only prolong bathing again and again and again and again. But if you come in contact with a saintly person, he'll purify you by his words. And then by the words you hear, you will change your actions so no more sins will happen again. So this is the, what's that old analogy? You teach, you feed a person fish, you know, you'll fulfill his hunger for a day, but if you teach him how to fish, you'll fulfill his hunger forever. So similarly, you can bathe in the Ganges day after day, but if you don't give up your sinful actions, you won't be purified. But if you associate with a saintly person, by his association, by the words, by the teachings, you will become purified permanently and freed from sin. So this is Bhagirath's answer to Ganga. Yes, you can come. Yes, certainly people will come. But because of your purifying nature, saints and sages, they'll take shelter at your banks. And so they, by their bathing, they'll eradicate the sins in there. So, and then he said, Lord Shiva can tolerate the force of your descent. So I will pray to him to catch you, more or less. He caught the Ganga on his head. And when we see pictures of Lord Shiva, he's many times depicted with the Ganges flowing from his tufts of hair. So that's the main understanding of the actual descent of the Ganga. I just wanted to read a nice purport. Prabhupada is talking about the Ganga itself. The water of the Ganges is called Patita Pavan, the deliverer of all sinful living beings. It is a proven fact that a person who regularly bathes in the Ganges is purified externally and internally. Externally, his body becomes immune to all kinds of disease, and internally he gradually develops a devotional attitude toward the Supreme Lord. Throughout India, many thousands of people live on the banks of the Ganges, and by regular bathing in her waters, they are undoubtedly being purified both spiritually and materially. Many sages have composed prayers in praise of the Ganges, and the land of India itself has become glorious because such rivers as Ganges, Yamuna, Godavari, Kavari, Krishna, and Narmada flow there. Anyone living on the land adjacent to these rivers is naturally advanced in spiritual consciousness. So here also, yes, by continual bathing, you will become purified eventually, but it takes a long time. But by the association of a pure devotee, lava matra, this 1 second, this moment of time, that same purification can happen. So by the two of them together, the Ganges attracts people wanting to become freed and also attracts the devotees, and by their combination, a wonderful spiritual advancement is had. Also, another appreciation of the Ganges, just as Krishna, he grew up on the banks of the Yamuna, and the Yamuna is glorified for that, for Krishna's playful pastimes in the Yamuna. So similarly, Lord Chaitanya, he grew up on the banks of the Ganges, and all his pastimes, so many pastimes we can read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and in Chaitanya Bhagavata, of his wonderful pastimes in the Ganges. So do we have any questions on the Ganga's descent? In the Bhagavatam, it started on verse 5 through 7, are the ones I read. Anything else? Okay, on to Ram. And as I was thinking how to start this class yesterday, I was thinking of, you know, there are different seasons in our devotee lives, in our ISKCON lives or our Gaudiya Vaishnava lives. We have like different festival seasons. And in my mind, this is just my speculation mind, in my mind I kind of like centered on three major seasons, and then in between them we have these nice little festivals as well. But the major seasons I see in my mind are like, there's the Krishna season, Lord Sri Krishna Shyamasundara. It begins with Balaram's appearance day, and then there's Krishna Jamastami, and it culminates in Radhastami. So that's like a whole season, those whole 2.5-3 months, you know, you can kind of immerse yourself in Krishna Leela, hearing about Krishna, concentrating on Krishna and serving him in that way. And then another season, naturally, is Kartik season, a whole month of concentration on Krishna and his charming childhood pastimes, centered around his the shelter-giving Govardhan. So that's another season we have that we can, and so many festivals within that season we can concentrate on. And then right now we're in the midst of the Gaura season, Gaura Leela season, beginning with the appearance of Advaitacharya a couple weeks ago, last week the appearance of Nityananda, and a few weeks from now Lord Chaitanya. And so I was thinking about this, we're in the midst of this season, you shouldn't just give it just a one day, each of their appearance days. I'll think about Lord Chaitanya and Gaurapaneem, and I'll think about Nityananda and Nityananda's appearance. Oh, this whole season we can, daily we should try to hear something. So I was thinking about Ram and Lord and Gaura Leela, what connection is there? And so there's a very famous song Prabhupada is singing, Paramakarana, and it's a song by Lochan Das Thakur, glorifying Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda as the Paramakarana, or the most merciful incarnations of the Lord. And when Prabhupada sings, he sings it very sweetly. But then there's a line in there he adds. I don't know if it's his composition or if it is from maybe another Acharya's composition that he's adding in. But when he comes to the line, Sabha Avatar Sara Shiramani Kevala Ananda Kanda. So that's the original verse by Lochan Das Thakur. But then after that, and before Bhaja Bhaja Bhai, Prabhupada adds, Rama Nishinha Varaha Kurma Avatari Avatari. And he sings, in one, at least the one recording that I'm thinking of, he sings that over and over again. And you're thinking, well, why is Prabhupada singing this in the midst of this song, Tilgorni Tai? And so, Sabha Avatar. Sabha Avatar is a source of incarnations. And when he's singing Rama Nishinha Varaha Kurma, these are the avatars. And then he says, Avatari, Avatari. And Avatari specifically means the source of the avatar. So here's glorification of Nitai Gaur as Avatari, the source of all incarnations. And Rama, Nishinga, Varaha, Kurma, Avatari, Avatari. All these incarnations, their very source is Gaur Nitai. So as we heard last week, Nityananda, the truths, just like that chapter, the truths of Nityananda. What does the truths mean? It means, who is he really? You know, what is his personality? And so throughout that chapter we're hearing, yeah, he is the source of all the Vishnus, all the quadruple expansions, and it's very detailed, sometimes complicated to understand, but when the Lord appears, he appears through these avatars coming from these different expansions of the Lord. And so here, Nityananda is the source of all of them. So when we hear about Ram, Nishinga, we can, especially in this Gaura season, we can think, ah, yes, Nityananda is the source. But we shouldn't think, oh, so that means Nityananda is better than Ram, or Ram is a little better than Nishinga, or Ramana is not as good as... No, we can't think of that, because we also hear that all these avatars, they're like candles. And although there's one candle that lit was the original candle, but all the candles have the same lighting power. So we shouldn't think in a material sense either. But we can affectionately think, yes, Gorni Thai, that we're so fortunate to be in this Gaura season and to know about Lord Chaitanya, because this avatar, Gorni Thai, they do not come every Yuga, every Kali Yuga. I think only once in every 27 cycles of Kali Yugas does Gorni Thai come. So how fortunate we are, just within 500 years or so, that we are able to be in the midst of their Sankirtan movement. So Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan. This is from the Brahma Samhita. Nanavatana Makarod Bhuvanesha Kintu Krishna Svayam Samabhavat Paramam Pumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who by his various plenary portions appear in the world in different forms and incarnations, such as Lord Ram, but who personally appears in his supreme original form as Lord Krishna. So Ram Leela, we may look, because some of our, you know, those who were born Indian bodies and born in India, was growing up with Ramayan was part of your life, right? It was very natural. It was, right? What was more popular in your childhood, Krishna Leela or Ram Leela? All of you? Yeah, so Ram is like, wow, Ram is pretty cool. But then, yeah? Yeah. But then we see Srimad Bhagavatam only has two chapters dedicated to Ram. Wow, what's that? Because, you know, even Sukadeva Goswami says, Ram has already been described in full in the Ramayana by Valmiki Muni. So I will only speak briefly of him. So in our Srimad Bhagavatam, we have just very short summary of Ramchandra. But to hear all the pastimes of Ram, we can hear the Ramayana. So again, Ram Leela is vast. I'm not going to be able to give a summary of that, but I did want to just speak of some things that I pulled out as quotes to understand Ram's incarnation. I mentioned before that Ram appeared as the ideal Kshatriya, ideal king, ideal ruler, to show how to rule the citizens, how to give the love and affection, to be the like the father of his citizens, to give that love and care, and how it wasn't a forced relationship. Everyone just naturally had this affection for Ram, so much so throughout his rulership. But he also appeared for other reasons. And this is from the fifth canto. These are from the prayers of Hanuman. And in the purport here, Prabhupada gives a very nice understanding of one of Ram's teachings of his Leela. And sometimes this, before I read it, I'll just say, sometimes this is taken way out of context and misused. So when we read it, you may see why. But here's Hanuman's prayer. It was ordained that Ravan, chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Lord Ramchandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared in the form of a human being. Lord Ramchandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravan, but also to teach mortal beings that material happiness centered around sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is a self-sufficient Supreme Personality of Godhead, and nothing is lamentable for him. Therefore, why else could he be subjected to tribulations by the kidnapping of Mother Sita? So, again, we can see both sides of this. This is, you know, coming from the male perspective, that, you know, the wife is the tribulations for the male, but certainly we cause many tribulations for our wives. Just ask mine. So when we read through this purport, we can go back and we can when I say male or wife, we can reverse them as well, depending where we're at in this life, in this birth. Purport. When the Lord appears in this universe in the form of a human being, he has two purposes, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Pratinaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chadushvitam, to destroy the demons and protect the devotees. To protect the devotees, the Lord not only satisfies them with his personal presence, but also teaches them so that they will not fall down from devotional service. By his personal example, Lord Ramchandra taught the devotees that it is better not to enter married life, which is certainly followed by many tribulations. End of paragraph. Now, when I was talking about the controversy, this many times this paragraph is taken out and said by certain members or certain people who are in a certain mood, and they'll say, this is the final statement. We shouldn't enter married life. Married life is nonsense. Even Ramchandra, his whole purpose, it was to show us we shouldn't enter married life. But then the very next paragraph, those who are not advanced in spiritual knowledge and who are therefore just the opposite of brahmanas generally take to family life, which is a concession for sex. Thus they enjoy sex again and again, although the sex is followed by many tribulations. This is a warning to devotees. To teach this lesson to devotees and to human society in general, Lord Ramchandra, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, underwent a series of tribulations because he accepted a wife, Mother Sita. Lord Ramchandra underwent these austerities, of course, only to instruct us. Actually, he never has any reason to lament for anything. And then he goes on. He says, one who accepts a wife must be a faithful husband and give her full protection. Human society is divided into two classes of men, those who strictly follow the religious principles and those who are devotees. That's amazing. We always think, well, there's two classes. There's the devotees and then there's the demons. But here, those who strictly follow religious principles and then those who are devotees. What does that mean? By his personal example, Lord Ramchandra wanted to instruct both of them how to fully adopt the discipline of the religious system and how to be a beloved and dutiful husband. Otherwise, he had no reason to undergo apparent tribulations. One who strictly follows religious principles must not neglect to provide all facilities for the complete protection of his family. There may be some sufferings because of this, but one must nevertheless endure it. That is the duty of a faithful husband. By his personal example, Lord Ramchandra demonstrated this duty. So we can gain, if we're a little insightful, we can say, yeah, I mean, ultimately, yeah, if we can just avoid family life, that's great. But if you can't, then you have to actually follow something, too. It's not just, okay, I give up, I'll get married, and that's the end of it. And, you know, off they go to the, what do we call the deep, dark well of family life. No, he said, it's trouble, it's tribulations, but it's very rewarding as well, because, you know, in the midst of that deep, dark well, there's many, many things that really give you strength in your devotional service as well. That, wow, yeah, even in this condition, I can remember Krishna, or we're engaging our children in Krishna's service. And when we see that developing, we become very happy. But it's not easy. And Lord Ramchandra's appearance was to show that it's not easy. You can't just... Because what happens, you know, sometimes as devotees or as renunciates, or we dare we say sometimes avadutas, if we label ourselves like this, avaduta means somebody who just cares nothing of the material realm. So we think, oh yes, there's some trouble, I'll just give it up. I'll go to Vrindavan, I'll go to Mayapur, and I'll just give it up. But no, Lord Ramchandra didn't show that. Is so many troubles from his childhood. He had to go leave his family early to go with the sage, travel around, kill rakshasas, kill demons, and then cursed get out of the kingdom, go to the forest, go live there with your wife. And then not only was that hard, but then wife being kidnapped and stolen, he could have said, well, there's a sign of Krishna, I should just, no. Then he had to build an army, do so many things, and he showed that he wouldn't give up that determination. So this is from, you know, at least my appreciation of Ram Lila. This is the real import for me, is that the determination to succeed is given by Ram Lila. The determination he showed to succeed so many times, nobody would have faulted him. Oh yeah, Ravana's pretty, you know, I don't fault you, you know, and go ahead, just give it up. But no, he kept pushing, he kept showing the determination to succeed. So that was, I felt was very nice. And here in the end of the purport, another aspect of the teachings of Ramchandra is that although Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees may apparently suffer from material tribulations, they have nothing to do with such tribulations. They are mukta purushas, liberated persons, under all circumstances. It is therefore said in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, yata deki vaishnavera vyahara dhuka nishchaya janiha taha paramananda sukha. A Vaishnava is always firmly situated in transcendental happiness because of engagement in devotional service. Although he may appear to suffer material pains, his position is called transcendental. The emotions of a lover and beloved feel when separated from one another are actually very blissful, although apparently painful. Therefore, the separation of Ram from Sita, as well as the consequent tribulation they suffered, is but another display of transcendental bliss. That is the opinion of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So that's a little deeper meaning, that the tribulations themselves for the Lord and as Ram and his Leela, that's why we say Ram Leela. It's not that he's suffering just like we're suffering, but it's Ram Leela. But the tribulations he was suffering was actually a form of great transcendental viraha or bliss, highest emotions. But for us, our tribulations, they're what is it? What is it? We say you get, if you fall down, pick yourself up, brush yourself off, start over again. You know, it's a sense of, it strengthens you in your quest or your journey. So that's mainly what I wanted to speak of, you know, Ramchandra.